You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the latest edition of the FWA podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio, and each and every week we get one of the top football writers in the land to preview the televised football fixtures at the weekend, and this week no different. Laurie Whitwell, the Midlands football correspondent from the Daily Mail, is on the line right now. First of all, good morning to you, Laurie.
Morning, Dave.
We're going to spin through these televised matches. I know you cover Leicester and Villa and numerous others for the Daily Mail, but neither on TV this weekend, Leicester or Villa, Laurie.
Mm. Yeah, no, well, I suppose they had their match last week, didn't they, with the evening kickoff on the Saturday, which turned out to be a little bit more entertaining, I think, than we thought after the first half of action.
Yeah, definitely so. So we'll talk a bit about Leicester and Villa at the end of the podcast, but we start the weekend with Norwich versus Liverpool. And at Norwich are 3-1, the draw 12-5, and Liverpool 19-20. Laurie, watching that Liverpool-Manchester United match last Sunday, it was torturous, really. The style of football wasn't conducive to decent viewing. And I don't know what Marouane Fellaini's got on Louis van Gaal, but he must have some incriminating photos somewhere, because how he starts and plays fixtures for Manchester United bemuses me on occasion. But the whole feeling surrounding both teams at the moment isn't very good, and the football they produced last Sunday wasn't particularly fluent.
No, it was dreadful. I mean, I must confess, I'm a United fan myself, and it was one of the rare matches I managed to get to as a sort of fan rather than in a working capacity. And at half-time, mood in the crowd was very much what is the action that we're witnessing, really. I mean, it was dreadful stuff. The passes just going astray. Weirdly, I completely agree where you're coming from with Fellaini. In this particular incident, I thought he wasn't a bad outlet, just given right. how poor the match was going. I thought, you know, needs must, and sort of that long ball sort of outlet isn't the worst option. I agree with you on the whole, you know, I just don't think he's United quality, but obviously he played a part in the goal, I suppose, in the end. I mean, Liverpool, it's just bizarre. I don't know if it's a message from Klopp when he's putting Stephen Caulker on up front, you know, in the dying minutes. I don't know if that's a message to his board to say, go out and get me another attacker, or whether it's a message to Christian Benteke or whoever. But it just seemed such a bizarre sight, you know, in the dying minutes of the match, depending on a central defender that you signed on loan from a Championship club. I mean, Liverpool created a few chances, didn't they? You know, they did have opportunities, and they probably should have scored at least once, but for, you know, poor finishing and David De Gea. But I don't know. I quite fancy Norwich in this one. That they, you know, Alex Neil has got them playing sort of decent football. They're a tight knit squad, and he's supplemented his squad with, you know, interesting signings in this window already. That they're certainly going for it to stay up, aren't they? So I get Carrow Road as well. They, you know, they've got a good style about them. They know their roles. Whereas Liverpool, I think, at the moment are a little bit fragmented.
Yeah, and I keep hearing, just to go back to Benteke, I keep hearing in the press that he's not a Klopp-type player. But Jurgen Klopp's been brought in as this almost messiah, this man that can do a job that no one else can. Surely he's got to work with the players that he's got right now.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, what do you have a manager for to hopefully improve the players that you've already got? I mean, he's obviously a very talented coach, and the stuff he did at Dortmund was almost revolutionary, I suppose. I guess what he wants from his attackers is to be able to press from the front, and Christian Benteke doesn't really do that. He gets on the end of things. He can link up play, but there were times, I mean, watching him at Aston Villa last season before Tim Sherwood came in, when we wondered, where was the player that, you know, we knew? His movement was very poor, limited. I mean, he scored a goal against Blackpool in the FA Cup, but prior to that had been anonymous, and it was a bizarre sight to see. And obviously Tim Sherwood went in there, shook him up, realized, you know, probably told him that he had 6 months to you know, save Villa and possibly earn his move, you know, if he wanted to. And he did the business again. I mean, against Liverpool in the FA Cup semi, he was brilliant, wasn't he? But for Klopp, I just think that he probably feels like, okay, I've got this guy in my squad. I'll use him, you know, perhaps 10, 15 minutes at the end of matches to see if he can get me a goal. But for me, he's not the guy that I'm going to build my team around.
I'm wondering about Daniel Sturridge as well. He's on the sidelines at the moment, seems to always be on the sidelines for Liverpool injured. He's just played 60 of a possible 116 Premier League games for the club since signing back in January 2013. That's only just over half the games that Liverpool have played. Do you think he'll be there next season, Sturridge?
I don't know. And Klopp's been hasn't been afraid straight away to bring up the spectre of sort of his injuries and how serious they are and whether or not you can play through them, which is quite a bold thing for a new manager to come in and do. But obviously, if he's been told by his medical people that this is the situation, he probably feels, why can't I speak out about it? I mean, he's not throwing the guy under a bus by any means.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard Didi Haman speak about the fact that he thinks there should be more transparency in it. But I do feel that if the balance between Daniel Sturridge being a brilliant player, and he was, you know, superb when he was with Luis Suarez in that season, they obviously went very close, to now the fact that he just doesn't play. I mean, you can't, that balance is now shifted, I think, in terms of how important he is to Liverpool. And I can well see Klopp selling him, you know, if he can get a bit of money for him, bringing his own player that he can trust to play, you know, three quarters of the season, you know, at least, if not more. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go.
And just one final word on Liverpool before we move on to the next game. What is the thought process behind handing Simon Mignolet a new 5-year contract? It's tough to win this league without a keeper that's absolutely superb, and he appears to be on the next rung, as it were.
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, he's not... For me, he makes too many mistakes, and he wouldn't be someone that you'd trust to be a number one if you've got ambitions to be Champions League club. I guess protecting their asset, you know, if they can time down to a long-term contract, there's no way that he goes for nothing, I suppose. But then again, you balance that with the duration of the contract, how much that's going to cost them, and what the transfer fee might be that they could get in. I don't know, to be honest. I mean, unless he's taken a slight wage cut to get these extra years, maybe that's the thought process. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Norwich could be the player there. They're worth a few quid, definitely, at a price of 3-1 here with William Hill. The tea time fixture is West Ham versus Manchester City. 4-1 West Ham to win this game. The draw 13-5 and Manchester City 8-11. Laurie, this is one that I'm really looking forward to, because both these teams tend to play attacking football. Some real quality on both sides as well. Dimitri Payet has been absolutely outstanding for West Ham this season. Good to have him back and fit and playing again in the Premier League. And Manchester City, they seem to be getting their players back at just the right time. Sergio Aguero returning to full fitness, and we all know how influential he can be for City.
Well, he can be the one that wins them the title, really. I mean, you know, we spoke about Daniel Sturridge earlier. I think Aguero is one that just persistently struggles with his injuries, you know, his muscle injuries, in the way that he plays. But he's a cut above, isn't he? He's probably one of the world-class players that the Premier League has got.
Yeah.
And if he scores the goals that we think he can, City win the title, I think. You know, albeit obviously Arsenal perhaps have got their act together a little bit this season. But I do like West Ham again at home. I know it's sort of another sort of team that you think perhaps should be the underdogs in terms of the odds, but you look at the teams that they've beaten already, the style of play that they have, and Man City's away record is not great by any stretch of the imagination. So again, I don't know, I fancy West Ham a price at 4-1. That's quite a way, really, I think, for the odds on it. I think they've been great. I think that the interesting thing about West Ham is when they had the injuries that they had, you know, to Lanzini, to Payet, obviously, to Sacco, you know, real key players that have got that creativity and that flair that I think other clubs higher up the Premier League might have wanted to get. I mean, I remember Mourinho talk about how Payet was on their radar, and now the sort of democratisation, I suppose, of the Premier League enables West Ham to compete for those kind of players, and the gap closes. But credit to West Ham and Slaven Bilic for actually grinding out results when they didn't have those players, when they had to rely on, you know, the squad players, and they weren't getting beaten. It wasn't great to watch, I don't think, at that time. I remember them coming to Aston Villa and sort of being outplayed by Villa, who then, you know, were searching for any kind of result. But now they've got the players back and they've been turning the performances again. It's a credit to them, really.
Yeah, I think it was a surprise to me, Laurie, how staunch defensively they were without those attacking players. James Collins, he's had a terrific season for West Ham. And Slaven Bilic has got to be given a great deal of respect, given the injuries, how they came together as a unit and just made sure they weren't conceding goals at a time when they weren't going to score many.
Yeah, but I remember it was that match after Villa, actually, that he got his new contract, I think, or they certainly started talking about it after the Swansea match away, where he was brilliant in the 0-0 down there, and obviously, you know, got that point, and it just means that it's not a loss. You know, it means you keep picking up the points, and the buoyancy of the early part of the season isn't lost totally. So, and he was magnificent. I mean, I think Slaven Bilic took it as a slight, as a part of a slight, really, when somebody described him as an old school defender, and instead he was much more than that. But he does bring that grit and that edge to a defence. You know, body on the line, clearances, no nonsense. I mean, he can play on the ball. He's obviously not a clogger, but I think you do need an element of that in the Premier League.
Definitely, I agree. West Ham could be the player then, 4-1 to beat Manchester City on Saturday tea time. Let's move on to Sunday's live matches, Laurie, and we start with Everton versus Swansea City. This is 1:30 on Sunday. Everton are 4-6 to win it. The draw 13-5, and Swansea in the betting at 9-2. Everton are a strange side, Laurie, because their home record is nowhere near the standard you would expect given the squad they have assembled at the club. No matter what anybody says about them, recent record at Goodison reads 1-3, drawn 4, lost 6 of their last 13 Premier League matches at home, which isn't good enough for the standard of players they've got at the club. And that comes back to the manager, doesn't it? They've dropped so many points from winning situations this season. Roberto Martinez, do you think he's culpable?
Well, it's a funny one. You speak to Everton fans, and the ones that I speak to certainly think he is, because he's now had this team for a number of years, and the old, I suppose, the old suspicions about his way of management haven't been eradicated. They have let slip so many leads where they should have closed out the game. They should have picked up wins. I mean, you kind of look at them and think they're a good side. You look at Barkley, Lukaku having good season, De La Feo, good season. But then you look at the league table, 11th.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
6 wins from 22. It's surprising, really. It's obviously all those draws that they've got. You know, they haven't lost a huge amount of matches, and they can go to places and win, and that you feel like they can beat anybody, really. But they can lose to anybody. So it's a real head scratch. I think Martinez, I mean, obviously when he came in, he benefited from the fact that David Moyes had a well-drilled defensive squad, you know, very, very tight. He knew his players. That, I think, that in his first season, that was kept, and he added a little bit of flair. But then as the seasons have gone on, he's obviously lost that, because that's not where his strengths lie. And ultimately, we're seeing the results. And I mean, 11th for Everton, it's just another middling season, isn't it, really? It's nothing to be excited about. And I can see why the supporters do get agitated at times. I mean, personally, I'd always like a team that draws 3-3 rather than 0-0, you know, given the amount of times United have done that this season. But it must be frustrating when you're in those leads and letting them slip late on or, you know, throughout the match.
Yeah, I think I'd be pulling my hair out if I was an Everton fan right now. As for Swansea, they've been a team that historically, or in recent history, have been managed really well from the top. There didn't appear to be a plan in place for the dismissal of Gary Monk, and that's seen them suffer slightly.
Yes, odd, really. I mean, I think it had got to the stage with Gary Monk where Hugh Jenkins just felt he needed to make some kind of change to spark something. I mean, personally, I think a lot of people think it was way too soon. Even if he had been having troubles with the dressing room or certain elements of the dressing room, that would for me be the time that you back the manager and you say this is the guy that you have to just deal with. So kind of get on with it. It seems like such a shame for a guy that did so well last season to then jettison him, you know, fairly early in the season, even though obviously that they want to just stay in the league and get the riches next season. The scramble for another manager didn't seem particularly Swansea-like. You know, usually they seem to have a good grasp of who they want to bring in. Obviously, they couldn't do the deal for Bielsa. They thought, you know, Alan Curtis, we'll keep you in charge. And then all of a sudden, we'll change it after a home loss to Sunderland. It did seem a bit haphazard. I mean, listen, maybe the guy that they've got in, you know, I don't know him that much about him personally, but when you sort of you speak to people who know from his in maiden days, they think he's a good manager and he could well, you know, be the kind of calming influence that they need at that time with the experience that they have. But it did seem very it didn't seem a cohesive plan in place, at least anyway.
No, I think that was the problem with Swansea. Good result against Watford, obviously, on Monday night. What do you think to this match then, Everton versus Swansea in terms of the betting? Everton are odds on to win it. Slightly difficult to trust, I suppose, at odds on.
It's a really tough one to call, actually. I mean, I could see it being, you know, 2-2 draw. To be honest, I don't know where my money would be on that one. It could go either way. I think you would lean towards Everton just because of the talent they've got in attack and the way you think they can pick teams apart when they're on form. But you never know. I mean, like I say, Swansea seemed, you know, tight in the match that they won 1-0. So you're not sure. I don't know where my money would be on that one, to be honest.
No, I kind of agree. If you're looking at two apiece, by the way, that's 18-1. I think Everton missed James McCarthy badly. I know he's kind of an unsung hero. He is the guy in the middle, at the centre of that midfield that really makes them tick, and he can break up play so well. I think they've missed him.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably it that you'd say. That's where Martinez perhaps doesn't focus his energies on, you know, looking at somebody that can just be a destroyer, looking at grinding out these results, which is what he is capable of doing.
We finished the weekend, Laurie, with a belter, Arsenal versus Chelsea, London derby, at 4 p.m. on Sunday. Arsenal are 21-20 to win it, the draw 12-5 and Chelsea 13-5 here with William Hill. And team news, of course, will be crucially important for this match, Laurie. It does sound as if both Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil will be available for Arsenal, which is huge for them, because two of their best players, for them to return in a game they don't have to win, but it would be a big boost for their title challenge if they did win it.
I certainly think if they've got designs on, I mean, it's been such a topsy-turvy season, but if they've got designs on winning it, they should be winning this match. You know, it's one where Chelsea are still stuttering despite Mourinho going and Hiddink coming in. Arsenal really need to sort of prove their mettle. So they've done that actually at time. You know, they beat United convincingly at the Emirates early in the season. They've picked up against Manchester City, you know, in recent times. They sort of seem to be getting to grasp with these bigger matches, whereas, and that's probably the stick you beat them with previously, certainly Wenger anyway. But I think here's another one where they need to show that title sort of mentality and go out and beat a Chelsea side that are probably there for the taking when you look at the sort of circumstances. I think Ozil and Sanchez is hugely important if they come back. I just think Sanchez is a brilliant player, and it's a real shame that he's had these sort of struggles with injuries after his Copa America exploits. He's just a bundle of energy and can score from anywhere. And obviously Ozil's having a great season, slipping in those passes, and he had his feet up in the week. So I don't know if that was a deliberate thing for Wenger, just to rest him, let him out and bring him back fresh for the Chelsea match, probably.
Yeah, I think the thing with Sanchez is he trains so hard as well, doesn't he? I think it's inevitable that he's going to suffer injuries at time, because according to reports from the Arsenal training ground, he's the first one out there and the last one in. So I suppose these things are going to happen.
Yeah, he obviously just loves it. I mean, I think when we spoke to Wenger after, I think the Leicester match where Sanchez scored a hat-trick at the King Power, he basically intimated that he would try and occasionally try and tell him to rest or not to play, and he just would get, you know, a complete refusal from Sanchez. He just obviously loves to play football, which is great to see, really. I mean, you know, obviously we spoke about other people in this game who perhaps treat it more as a job, which you can understand given the money, but it's refreshing, I think, to see somebody who's obviously come from where he's come from hit the heights that he has, but still has that desire and that hunger to just kick a ball about.
Do you think Arsenal win this game then? The last time they beat Chelsea in the league was back in 2011. They do have a really poor record against Chelsea historically, but I suppose Mourinho's left now, and it's not that Wenger versus Mourinho dynamic as it has been in the past, and he's had such problems against the Portuguese in recent years. Everything seems to be aligned for Arsenal here. If they can't do it now, they never will.
Well, that's it. That's what we've sort of said at numerous times this season, and then they've let up a sort of slip or you know, put in a performance that wasn't quite what you'd expect. I remember the one at West Brom where they lost 2-1. You know, and you kind of thought, is that the real Arsenal we're seeing? Sort of the sort of softer underbelly, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know. Again, I think I can see it being a draw. I can see Chelsea grinding it out. You know, having that spirit. You know, that they showed against Everton in the last match. You know, they seem to have a little bit more about them, I suppose, now. You know, a little bit more effort than they did under in the dying days of Mourinho. So I can see it being a tougher one for Arsenal to overcome. And if they don't score early, I can certainly see it being a draw anyway.
Yeah, the draw is 12-5 in this market. Laurie, obviously, you're the Midlands football correspondent for the Daily Mail, and you cover all the Midlands clubs, and few in action this week. West Brom Villa should be tasting, and Leicester versus Stoke as well. Just before you leave us, how do you see those two games materialising?
Well, I'm at West Brom Villa myself on Saturday, so and that's a chance, obviously, that the reverse fixture was Saido Berahino scoring one of his rare goals this season, getting a rare start up at Villa Park. I mean, Tony Pulis has got his team really well drilled. Villa often start slow and then grow into the match, and Gard makes a few changes and they finish quite well. That they have done the opposite, I suppose, of what Everton have been doing, and have been picking up the draws here and there from losing positions. I can see it being, again, a 1-1. I'm sorry to sit on the fence, but it's just, I can't see either side. You know, I don't think Villa have necessarily the quality to go out and beat West Brom, even though they need the points more than West Brom do. And I can see West Brom managing to sort of put up that kind of stubborn performance after the defeat at Southampton. I don't think Pulis will want them to. Well, he certainly won't want them to go and to lose. So I think he'll be doing absolutely everything to just make sure that they do not lose that match. And they've got a couple of key men missing, but I think they'll have just about enough now, really, to get the point at least.
21-10 the draw. Just before we move on to the other game, how's Remy Gard done coming into Aston Villa? Because the response wasn't exactly instantaneous.
No, there wasn't that sort of bounce that you perhaps might expect. I mean, he drew his first match 0-0 against City, and that was sort of seen as a positive performance and then result, obviously. I personally don't think the squad's good enough. I don't think that the players are there to score them the goals that they need, you know, or keep it tight at the back. I think he's obviously very methodical, and in press conferences, he's an interesting character. You know, he won't just answer questions for the sake of it. He'll ask you questions back. He seems to know his own mind. I certainly think he didn't realise just how big a job it would be when he walked in, even though he did say all the right things. I think he probably thought he'd get better results than he had done. And those four matches before Christmas, before January killed him, really, the two draws against West Ham and Newcastle, and then the defeats to Norwich and Sunderland. I mean, I think he was going to get 8 points from those matches, breathe a little bit of life into the place and encourage transfer targets in January to there was a reason to come to the club. I think they've had to readjust now, and I'm not sure they're going to spend all that much money in January. And I think that they've realised that the Championship is where they're destined. He said he's going to stay. The club want him to stay no matter what, which is a again, sort of a preemptive move, I suppose. I think he's a good manager, I do, in the sense of things, but just with the cards he's been dealt, I don't think he's had the chance to show it, really.
21-10, the draw in that game, and Leicester, just slight odds against to beat Stoke on Saturday. This will be a tough fixture, I think, for Leicester City against Stoke, who are a vastly improved side now.
Yes, I mean, again, Leicester, they're keeping on up there. I mean, they're top of the table, and if you think about Moreze's missed penalties, that would have been even higher. I know it's quite maybe churlish to say that, given how many points he's accrued with his, you know, brilliant play early in the season. But it's just, you kind of feel like if they're going to finish in the Champions League places again, they can't lose this match. They did the business down at White Hart Lane when we kind of thought, okay, the bubble's burst, and they went and won 1-0. They've changed their sort of style a little bit. They're much more resilient defensively, and Huth and Morgan are, I mean, it's tough to get past them now. I mean, Morgan's emerged into one of the league's best defenders, really, which is amazing when you consider where he's come from. Vardy's obviously on a little bit of a drought at the moment, but he still has that energy about him, and he's still, you know, creating chances or getting into goal scoring opportunities. I think Moreze has hit a little bit of a lull, and I mean, the rest of the team, sort of, you know, that they're, I mean, Kante's a great little purchase, yeah. And he's got bundles of energy going up and down, but I think the goal scoring, if they can sort of see this match as one where they need to go out and express themselves again. Obviously Ranieri rested a lot of them in for the match against Spurs. I think we could see possibly the return of the Leicester that we saw at the start of the season, given the fact that Stoke like to have possession, like to go on the attack, leaving then space for Leicester to break and do what they do best. I think the job that Mark Hughes has done has been brilliant in terms of changing that squad around from the style of play that they had previously, the kind of additions he's been able to bring in. I think we're still yet to see the full fruits of that. Bojan obviously suffered his knee injury, which set him back a little bit, but he's getting back there. Shaqiri's shown glimpses of it. Arnautovic is certainly getting the best out of him this season. They are a really good side to watch, and they've obviously had great results at home. So it will be a really intriguing match, actually, which way this goes as well.
Yeah,
I couldn't call it.
I can't either. It's a tough one to call. 12-5 for the draw in that game. Laurie, thank you for your company on the podcast
Cheers,
this morning.
Dave.
Remember, you can follow Laurie on Twitter at Laurie Whitwell. If you want to follow Laurie on Twitter, you can follow myself at D Kellner. Laurie, hopefully we'll catch up in the future, and enjoy the football this weekend. Enjoy that game between West Brom and Villa at the Hawthorns, and hopefully we'll speak soon.
I'll try to. Thanks, Dave. You too.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.